You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 9 minutes past 8 o'clock right now on this Thursday, February the 15th. Does Hillary Clinton have to admit that her vote to authorize the war in Iraq was a mistake? Does she have to say that in order to please more liberal Democratic primary voters? Does Rudy Giuliani have to stake out positions that are more to the right to woo socially conservative voters? We will talk presidential primary politics this hour based on these particular candidates and issues being in the news this week, and based on the growing fields of candidates in both parties, more announcements every day, and a new poll out yesterday showing that Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani are the leading candidates. They are the front runners in their respective parties. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest as we preview these issues and talk about some of these latest issues going on the presidential campaign trail. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Let me play for you a clip from a town hall meeting in New Hampshire over the weekend that Senator Hillary Clinton was at, and this was he identified himself as a Democratic primary voter, Roger Chilton, and here's what he asked.
I want to know if right here, right now, once and for all, without nuance, you can say that war authorization vote was a mistake. And the reason I want to ask is because a lot of other senators have already done so.
And did she reply without nuance? Here's her response.
Well, I have said, and I will repeat it, that knowing what I know now, I would never have voted for it. But I also, and I mean, obviously you have to weigh everything as you make your decisions. I have taken responsibility for my vote. The mistakes were made by this president, who misled this country and this Congress into a war that should not have been waged.
So what do you think? Does Hillary Clinton have to answer that question? Roger Tilton says she does for him.
I can't listen to her until I hear her say that was a mistake. And I love what she says about health care. I love what she says about capping troop levels. I love what she's saying about the war now. But until she says it was a mistake, I'm not going to listen to anything else she says.
1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We welcome in, and we are happy to have with us, David Redlosk, an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He is the author of How Voters Decide, Information Processing During an Election Campaign. He formerly ran a Democratic presidential primary caucus in Johnson County, Iowa, in 2004. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So this Democratic primary voter in New Hampshire, Roger Tilton, it says that he has to hear Hillary Clinton say that vote for the Iraq War was a mistake. How many voters are there like him?
I think he represents a substantial number of activist Democrats. And I say activist Democrats because they're the ones who really matter in Iowa and New Hampshire as we get things started. It's my sense, actually, that the liberal wing of the party, as it were, is still not real forgiving of anybody who voted for the war and hasn't essentially come clean on it. In Clinton's case, she's trying to be very, very careful and very nuanced on the issue. So she has said things like we just heard, but what they're looking for is for her to simply say, mea culpa, I was wrong. John Edwards has done that.
Mm-hmm.
He came out and did that a while back, and I think it has played very well for him.
Help me understand why it's so important for the liberal wing of the party or this these activist voters to hear Hillary Clinton say, this was a mistake. I made a mistake. Why is it so important to hear those words?
No, I think it's a couple of things. One is many of them haven't been very happy with her public pronouncements on the war from the beginning, of course. She voted for it. She appeared to strongly support it, not just voting for it, but consistently for quite a long time. And that's a very, very hot-button issue with the liberal wing of the party. And it's important that people understand that when we're talking about the Iowa caucuses and we're talking about the New Hampshire primary, the first two major events, it isn't the average voter who's going to come out and decide this. It really is the group of activists who tend to be more liberal. They're just very nervous about her. I think there's a sense that during her Senate career, she's moved much more to the center than she was perceived to be while she was first lady. And I think that that they're just kind of nervous about that.
Yeah. Why is she so reluctant to say it was a mistake, my vote was a mistake?
That's a really good question. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think you have to go into the psyche of this to get any sense of it. It's not clear to me that it's a political decision. That is, that they sit around and go, well, exactly how should we nuance this? I think it may simply be that it's extraordinarily difficult for her to admit, bluntly admit that this is a mistake.
You don't think it's to show that she's tough and resolved and not a flip-flopper?
Well, I mean, that could certainly play here. I mean, one of the real unknowns in this race is to what degree does the fact that she's a woman really matter in terms of how women tend to be perceived versus men? Women, we all know the old sense of things, right? Women have to be tougher than men to be seen as an equal, and that may be part of what's going on here, but I don't think it's really that. I really think this just goes to who she is as a person.
Yeah, and as for her top Democratic challengers, you mentioned John Edwards. He has said, I made a mistake when I voted to authorize that war. And Barack Obama's position on the war is, I've been against it all along. He didn't have to vote.
Right, yeah. He had it, in that sense, he had it easy. He wasn't sitting there at the time and didn't have to vote. So it is true that I think he publicly opposed it from the beginning. But it's one thing to sit, where he was sitting at the time in the state legislature and publicly oppose something. It's another to actually be in the Senate and have to make the decision.
Yeah. And again, how important is this particular vote or a candidate, especially in the Democratic Party, a candidate's position on the war in Iraq in this campaign?
Well, I think everybody assumes it's really important right now. There's a clear sense in the public when you look at public opinion polling that the war in Iraq is by far the number one issue on people's minds right now. Of course, we're 11 months away from the Iowa caucuses, and we're they're away from the actual election. So it's they have to play to where things are right now, and the public cares about this issue a lot. The Democratic base, the folks who are going to make the primary decisions, care about it even more than the general public. They really want, I think, people to just stand up, their candidates to just stand up and say, this was wrong, I'm going to do something about it.
Let me turn over to the Republican side of the ticket for a while. This surprised me. I saw in the paper yesterday, I think, that Rudy Giuliani is the front runner on the Republican side in this poll done by USA Today. Does that surprise you?
Yes and no, and I put it that way. In a sense, Rudy Giuliani carries a lot of weight simply because he's got incredible name recognition, and most of what people know about him is what happened on September 11th and in the days following September 11th. He was the mayor of New York, and he stood there with his firefighters and his police and other emergency services folks. He stood there with the president. And I think from the standpoint of public opinion polling right now, general polling, you're really polling primarily name recognition and vague images of the candidates. And in that case, Giuliani is going to jump to the top. I mean, that's obviously McCain is as well known as Giuliani, but the difference is Giuliani gets the tag America's mayor. He gets the he gets all the sort of positive vibe from having been in charge when this happened and immediately responding. It's 5.5 years ago now, and most of the images are very fuzzy. I would bet you that if you actually asked voters for details about Giuliani and McCain, they could give you far fewer on Giuliani.
Mm-hmm. The people who are watching this, though, the a little closer right now, maybe the more socially conservative voters aren't thrilled, I would suspect, with his positions on some of these social issues. He's, what, pro-gun control and pro-choice and what else?
I mean, you can't be a Republican mayor of New York and have been a social conservative Republican. You would never have gotten elected. Giuliani, in fact, just yesterday says, you know, I will nominate conservative judges, but I am pro-choice.
Mm-hmm. But he needs to try to appease voters by saying, "I'll try to get you a judge on the bench that isn't."
Well, that's the real tricky problem he faces. This is a guy who potentially, and again I say potentially because voters don't really know him yet, potentially could be attractive across party lines. But you have to get through your own party's primaries first. And just as on the Democratic side, it's the liberal Democrats who control that process. On the Republican side, to a great extent in the last few cycles, the social conservatives have been firmly in control of the primaries. And I think this is really tough for Giuliani. I think the social conservatives in general are a little frustrated because the three people viewed as front runners right now, Giuliani, McCain, and Romney, are none of them really are social conservatives in the mold mm-hmm. that they want.
Let me remind listeners that we're talking presidential primary politics, talking about a variety of issues hot off the campaign trail this hour. Things going on in the presidential campaign this week, including Hillary Clinton getting grilled on her vote to authorize the war in Iraq when she was in New Hampshire. Does she have to admit that vote was a mistake? She wouldn't go that far when she was pressed on it by a voter. And we're talking about Rudy Giuliani and whether he's too liberal to be elected by the Republican base. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and Madison 263-1890. Poll out this week showing that New York Senator Hillary Clinton and former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani have widened their leads over their rivals in recent weeks. They are the front runners in the Democratic and Republican presidential nomination campaigns. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll join Ben Marins this afternoon for At Issue. Between 4 and 6. After 5, Ben will be talking with the author of Privacy Lost. I think that's about losing our privacy, so tune in for that after 5 o'clock. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, it's our Friday Week in Review. Hope you will be with us tomorrow as well when we talk with two guests from different perspectives about all the major news issues of the week, from Wisconsin to the world. We are focusing in on the presidential primary and news from the campaign trail this hour with our guest, David Redlosk, who is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He is the author of How Voters Decide, Information Processing During an Election Campaign. And let me go to the phones and take our first caller, Kathy in Watertown. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much for the forum and what you do. As far as Hillary saying it was a mistake to vote, I really don't think at the time she voted, she felt it was a mistake. So I don't think she should admit it. And, I as a liberal, and I've pretty much always been a liberal, feel that the war in Iraq, while it was, it has been run wrong, it shouldn't have been in the, started in the first place. Now that we're there, we need to finish. We need to finish it correctly, and I think Hillary's the one that can take us there. And as far as her going to the middle, you know, maybe she's really an elected representative that listens to her constituents. Did you think about that? I mean, I really think, hey, I'm all for Hillary right now.
So. Sounds like it. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you.
She, I'm sure, appreciates the support, too. Well, there's someone who maybe thinks Hillary's doing the right thing, Professor Redlosk.
Yeah, and I think this is exactly the challenge that she faces, because I, you know, it's always unreasonable to paint broad strokes in any case, and Clinton is certainly coming at us as an unusual candidate. Just the fact that her husband was president, the fact that she's a woman, there are a lot of cross-cutting factors in this for her that that have to be thought about. And there certainly isn't unanimous opinion on what to do about the war. I think Kathy's comments are a perfect example of that. I suspect that other folks who consider themselves liberal share her sense that we have to somehow finish the job. Other people say we've got to get out now, and there are timetables and what have you. It is a bit of a minefield when it comes into the question of trying to figure out how to appeal to the most caucus-goers, to the most voters. And that's, of course, what it comes down to. Right now, it probably actually doesn't matter much. I mean, I this sounds very Iowa-centric, and mm-hmm. apologize to Wisconsinites here, but it doesn't probably matter much what the national feeling is until we get into the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary. Because both of those events, like it or not, for better or worse, are going to winnow the field. They, you know, some people aren't even going to make it to that point. Others are going to drop out as soon as those events happen. And at that point, we'll be much, much more focused on who these candidates are and what they're going to need to do. So the problem that Clinton and any candidate faces right now is a very specific one, which is how do you do at least as well as expected and maybe better than expected in Iowa and New Hampshire? And then you move on to, you know, the rest of the primaries.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Iowa, our former governor, Tommy mm-hmm. Thompson's been spending a lot of time there lately. How's he being received?
We've seen a lot of Tommy Thompson so far. I think he's been here about six times in recent months. And he's facing the same challenge, I think, that anybody who isn't Giuliani, McCain, and to a lesser extent, Romney is facing right now, which is how do you get anybody to pay attention? Thompson's had decent events in the sense of a caucus event. He's drawing, you know, between 50 and 100 people to an event. That's very typical at this time of the year. The problem, of course, is we have a very unusual year. If Giuliani comes in, he'll draw probably 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And certainly on the Democratic side, and Clinton came in and Obama came in and drew thousands. That's not the norm for the caucuses. So if we think about how Tommy Thompson's doing in sort of the traditional caucus approach, which is get out there into the towns and the cities, meet with Iowans in their living rooms, talk to people, he's doing all of that. He's building the organization. He's gotten some major, major Iowa people signing on with his campaign. And so in that sense, he's kind of doing everything you need to do what we would call better than expected, which is really what the game is in Iowa. It's you know, mm-hmm. what does the media say is going to happen, and then what actually happens? So when the media says that last time around, for example, that John Edwards was going to come in fourth and he comes in second, he's suddenly a superstar. He didn't win the caucuses.
Right,
you know,
right.
Kerry won the caucuses, but Edwards got a huge play because he did better than expected. The room for Thompson in this whole process really is, can he connect better with caucus goers because of his experience as a governor, his experience in welfare reform, his experience in Washington, and do better than the media will expect him to do?
Mm-hmm. Let me take another caller, Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning to you. I'd like to say that it's my understanding that Giuliani was already the mayor of New York for about 9 or 10 months, I believe, during the time that the tower was struck the first time. And yet, and so that should have certainly been a warning to take a lot of precautions. And yet, when it was struck the second time, it was soon discovered that the electronic communication systems between the police and the firemen, for instance, didn't mesh, mm-hmm. and that probably caused so many thousands of deaths that didn't need to occur if those policemen and firemen who had climbed the tower could have been. Redirected. So I'd like to see somebody ask him that question. Why in those intervening years was not that rectified? You know, what else was not even looked at? And it took two blows to the towers before perhaps many issues were not looked at, much less rectified. And I'd also like to say that that I think that if Hillary does not admit that she made a mistake, that would ultimately prove that she is just as stubborn as Bush is. As she claims that Bush is. I think she needs to actually say that, I'm sorry I voted. I'd also like to say, dear, that I hope that all the cable channels play primary colors as often as possible between now and the election, because I think that movie and certainly people should be reading the book.
All right. Thank you very much, Nancy. She had a lot to say there, but let's talk a little bit about Giuliani screwed up, she says, during 9/11. Are people or voters going to hold that against him?
Well, it is kind of interesting because I was talking to a colleague the other day and saying, you know, everyone has forgotten how Giuliani was viewed on September 10th, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
It was very unpopular. He was thought to be arrogant, difficult to deal with. There were all kinds of, while he was credited with doing a lot to clean up New York, Times Square had been cleaned up, a lot of other, you know, crime had dropped, there were a lot of other things people were complaining about. And so, you know, on September 10th, Rudy Giuliani was really not very popular. The caller, Nancy, is referring to the first attacks on the World Trade Center, the attempt to bomb it, which came from a truck bomb that was
right
in the basement underground parking. And it is an interesting question as to whether the Giuliani administration failed to take the necessary steps. At the same time, my guess right now is that that's all water under the bridge. I mean, voters really aren't going to focus on that. Now, whether any of his opponents might focus on it is a different question, but I don't see it. I mean, I think September 11th just looms way too large in the imagination to have things that happened before it have a huge impact. We all know about the electronic communication problems now, and it doesn't seem to have rubbed off on him.
Yeah, I saw Rudy Giuliani in a repeat early this morning. I guess he was on Larry King last night, and he said, indeed, he is running for president, and he was talking. He was talking about, you know, about making mistakes in the past, and that he's human, and everybody makes mistakes. So he's not afraid to say, "I made a mistake."
And I think that the caller's point about Hillary mm-hmm. is just. Having, you know, Kathy and then Nancy call are just lays out perfectly
mm-hmm.
the challenge that Clinton faces, because there's strong feeling that she needs to show that she understands, you know, how to be flexible when you have to be flexible. But there's also strong feeling that she shouldn't say she made a mistake when it might not have been a mistake at the time she did it. Right? I mean, this is really a complicated situation.
Let's take another caller, Rick in La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, I'd like a follow-up, if possible. You know, she has to do more. Hillary has to do more than apologize and admit she was wrong. She has to stop posturing before the American-Israeli Political Affairs Committee, just as Edwards did. You know, the saber-rattling like Bush against Iran and, you know, all options are on the table. She's got to stop doing that and giving us an impression that she's a political chameleon, you know, and this speaks to the nature of the political system. What's really the difference between a one-party dictatorship and a two-party dictatorship, or as Helen Keller used to say, Tweedledum and Tweedledee?
Well, let me get a response from our guest and see if there's reason for a follow-up. Rick, go ahead. Professor Redlosk?
Well, this again continues to be one of the challenges Clinton faces specifically, but I think all Democrats actually face this problem, which is how to balance support for Israel and the Israeli lobby and the fact that the Israeli lobby is extraordinarily important in American politics with the sort of political realities and the world realities at this point. In particular, again, this question, you find Democrats very nervous that somebody's going to say that they're wimps, that they're unable to handle, you know, war issues, and therefore, you know, we can't allow Democrats to have control when so much is at stake. And so Democrats have a tendency, I think, to do perhaps even more saber-rattling in this kind of environment than do Republicans, which is a little bit of an oddity. I think the other point, though, that Rick's kind of making here is the question of whether there's any real difference. And I know there are big differences of opinion on that question. At one level, it does seem that both parties are under sort of the same kind of control. They're in hock to corporate interest, to moneyed interest or labor interest, but in any case, money interests. On the other hand, I think all we have to do is look at the last two presidential elections, and clearly it's hard to argue that it made no difference who we elected.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. We met many other callers and many other emailers, including this email from Joe in River Falls, who says, "I favor Edwards with Obama running a close second so far, but it seems like Hillary Clinton is expected to apologize for her vote in favor of the war while the others can just express regret. Is this a gender difference in expectations?" I'm not sure that's exactly that the others only expressed regret. Edwards actually said, "I made a mistake," right?
I think Edwards has actually in recent times been very straight about saying it was the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake. I was wrong. But the you know, Joe brings up a point about gender expectations, mm-hmm, and differences. It's really sort of interesting, and I think people don't realize that in the last 10 to 15 years, women running for office, and we're talking here about, you know, state legislatures and Congress, have actually had an equal chance with men. That is, when a woman runs, she's as likely to win or lose as a man running. But far fewer women run in the first place, and so we don't have anything close to gender equity in legislatures, you know, all over the country. But that really begs the question of whether we have different expectations of male and female candidates. There's some research that suggests that women who run for offices that are considered more nurturing offices are more successful versus men. So women will run, you know, here in Iowa, can tend to be more successful for the offices outside of the governor, so the Secretary of Agriculture, for example, or even the lieutenant governor. I don't know if I buy that completely, but I do think people look at men and women differently. I think we can't help but do that. And again, this is one of the challenges that Clinton faces as basically the only woman in the entire field on both sides. How does she present herself? It's a really, really tough question.
Yeah. Well, how about, and I don't mean to make light of gender politics, but how about a man who dresses up as a woman? Did you know that Rudy Giuliani dressed up in women's clothing and photographs of him? I don't know. This was many years ago. Donald Trump was hugging him and such. And Garrison Keillor, of all people, a Prairie Home Companions, Garrison Keillor wrote a column about this. And I mean, something like that. It's a, you know, one-time silly thing. But is that something that, how's that going to play in Iowa?
Well, I don't think that actually. I think what plays is the idea that some of these folks actually come across as human beings, mm-hmm, with senses of humor. And feeling that you could, you know, as we like to say, sit down and have a beer with them. And others of them come across, of course, as very uptight and above everybody else, and you don't feel comfortable. And I think when you're dealing with a place like Iowa, which is very much retail politics, person-to-person politics, you know, Iowans want to feel that they could sit down with these folks and, you know, just comfortably chat with them and laugh and talk and what have you. Whether that's true or not, that's what they want to feel they could do. So I think the Giuliani thing in particular is one of those examples where it's not a bad thing for him to have something silly like this be out there.
Yeah. Is it different, though, with the socially conservative voters?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm. I mean, one of the challenges that I always kind of face myself, and I'm not on that side, but in my own involvement in politics, is I very often have to remind myself that I'm taking it all too seriously, too intently, and to kind of back off a little bit myself. I think it's very easy when you care a lot to be so focused on what you care, no matter which side you're on, that you lose sight of the fact that these people are, in fact, human beings.
We're talking presidential politics, presidential primary politics, with lots of news from the campaign trail out this week, including a new poll showing that Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani are the front runners in their respective parties. They've actually widened their leads over their rivals in recent weeks. And talking about how Hillary Clinton on the weekend in New Hampshire was being grilled about her vote to authorize the war in Iraq, a voter wanting her to admit it was a mistake. She did not, at least not specifically. And talking about how some are wondering if Rudy Giuliani is too moderate to be elected in the Republican primaries. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your thoughts and questions about these candidates or others. Our guest is David Redlosk. He is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, author of How Voters Decide, Information Processing During an Election Campaign. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, is Iran supplying bombs that kill American troops in Iraq? After 9, Kathleen and her guests will discuss Iran's involvement in the Iraq war. That's coming up. We're talking about presidential politics, and Diane in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I just heard a statement from Hillary attacking Iran for bringing in, must be what your next program is about, bringing in weapons, killing American soldiers, and she sounded almost verbatim like Bush, and I was wondering if she was ready to vote for a war against Iran. I was really surprised when I heard the words that she used because it sounded so much like George Bush.
Yeah, I'm not familiar exactly what she said about Iran. Are you, Professor Redlosk?
I haven't yet heard that. I think this is the reference back, though, to the previous caller on the question of where she is kind of saber rattling on this issue. While I don't know exactly what she said, I don't have that in front of me.
Yeah.
I do think that she does continue, as I said, to face this challenge of finding the right balance.
Yeah.
And I think some of this is her own self. I mean, I don't think this is just political calculations. I think, you know, this is her own self. She has a particular point of view, and that's what we're seeing.
Well, Leo Duran, my producer, is checking the news wires, and he's saying that Hillary Clinton was warning the Bush administration to not take any military action on Iran without getting congressional approval first. So I don't know if that's necessary.
I would certainly expect that. There's no way that that the White House could move on Iran without going to Congress, not in the current environment. I mean, they could, but in the current environment, I think that'd be a huge constitutional crisis, actually.
Yeah. Thanks, Diane. Let's go next to Tom in Green Bay. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. When I think back to the time when President Bush was making his presentation to the American people and to the members of Congress, giving us justification for going to war, I think that all of us were looking for some degree of reality and authenticity in what he was saying, and we finally came to the conclusion that the president must have some information which he cannot publicly reveal, either because he wanted to protect the sources or for reasons of national security. I think that was a tipping factor in Hillary Clinton and other members of Congress ultimately voting for our decision to go to war, giving to the president the benefit of the doubt, and assuming that he had information that he could not pass on to us. I'll take my comments off the air.
You have any comments for him, Professor Redlawsk?
Well, I think, in fact, all you have to do is go back and look at the public opinion polling from the standpoint of the public as a whole. Certainly, when Bush made the case and Colin Powell made the case and the administration was out there, the public was strongly behind them. And I suspect, as the caller said, that for a lot of people, that calculation, to the extent we make any of these kind of calculations, was that, well, I don't know all the details, the president must know what he's talking about, and he's got information that certainly we don't have. When it comes to the Congress, it's a little trickier because members of Congress, and especially the leadership in Congress, is briefed at the top secret levels. I mean, they know the information. And in fact, the administration early on made the point, well, we gave, the members of Congress had the same information we did. The real problem, of course, now it appears that the information was more or less doctored. And so members of Congress may have had the information, but it was bad information. So I don't know that we can let them off on the basis that they didn't know something, but I do think we can let them off. I don't know if that's quite right, but I do think we can understand that they were operating from flawed information in many cases. And I think that's one of the points that Clinton's trying to make. She's trying to say, knowing what I knew then, I wasn't wrong, but what I knew then was wrong, and the Bush administration was wrong. And that's parsing it out pretty carefully, and I think that's what people are reacting to on both sides of whether supporting or opposing her on that point.
Let's take Zach now in Green Bay. Hello, Zach.
Good morning. I'm just rather amazed that Hillary appears not to have learned a lesson that all Democrats should have learned from Bill Clinton, and that is when to stop the nuancing and when to be direct. Particularly in the Lewinsky affair, if President Clinton would have said, "I fooled around, I'm sorry, if she wants a divorce, she can have it." If he had done that, the amount of respect by the American people for President Clinton would have been much greater, and I think the position of Gore would have been stronger, and we may not have had the national disaster, which is the Bush administration.
Depends on what your definition of is.
But I think this is really interesting because I think those of us who sit and watch them are often really puzzled by politicians. We don't really understand why they don't just come straight out and say something, whatever it might be. And especially those politicians who get caught in some kind of scandal environment, some kind of problem, they do have a tendency to try to stonewall it, to try to ignore it, to try to put it aside in some fashion or another. Some research in political science has looked at this issue of making excuses and apologizing. And, the research seems to show that if you apologize straight up and you're straight with folks, there's a lot less risk to you as a politician than if you dissemble, if you try to, get around it and what have you. And I think, actually, that's the calculation that Edwards has made here. I mean, he voted for the war. You can't get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
Voted for the war, and I think his calculation is simply, it's probably better, and I think so far we're seeing that it's probably better to just say I was wrong.
Right.
But that lesson, we don't have to just look at Bill Clinton. There's an entire history all the way back of office holders and politicians who can't say I was wrong.
Yeah, I did hear some commentators over the past few days talking about this question-answer from New Hampshire with Hillary Clinton. And they're saying that they think Hillary really is not only trying to be, strong with national defense and all that, but also she wants to avoid the John Kerry label and some kind of using audio in ads that I voted for right. It before I voted against it.
Right, and that's always a worry. I mean, I think that, in this day and age, no matter what you say, it's going to be taped by somebody and it's going to be available to somebody else. And I think everybody worries about that. But I don't know whether they're right. I mean, they might be right to be very concerned about that. A lot depends on how the media plays these things. If the media buys into the flip-flopper claim and every time they talk about a candidate, they talk about flip-flopping, that has an impact. If the media just says, the X candidate is saying Y candidate is a flip-flopper, and then it goes away, it doesn't matter. But, of course, we don't know ahead of time which things the media is going to key on and which ones they aren't.
Lots of other callers here, but before we run out of time, I meant to ask you, even though we've been focusing in on Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani for the most part, that this week former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney really tried to outflank, it says here, his better-known rivals for the Republican presidential nominations to win the hearts and minds of conservative Christian voters, because he's saying, I'm opposed to abortion and embryonic stem cell research in an interview with the Today Show. But he really ran for governor in Massachusetts on an abortion rights, pro-gay rights platform, didn't he?
He did. And in fact, we're talking Massachusetts here. To be a Republican in Massachusetts could be to be a Democrat in a lot of states. The reality is that he has a record as a moderate Republican, but he needs to remake that record to try to appeal to the most likely caucus goers and primary voters who are towards the right side of the Republican Party. This is a really difficult challenge that he faces, and which is why, partly because every time he says, "I'm a conservative," we're also reminded about his experience as Massachusetts governor. So far, I don't think he's getting the kind of traction that he would like to get in the cultural conservative environment, but there's still some time left, and it could happen. In some ways, he has an interesting bigger problem, and it's a little bizarre when you think about it, but some recent polling shows something like 88% of Americans claim they would vote for a woman, and 85% claim they would vote for a black man, but only 72% say they would vote for a Mormon. Mm. So it's apparently okay still to be concerned about a Mormon running, but it's no longer okay to be concerned about a black man or a woman running. And I just found that fascinating. And I think that is a bit of a hill he has to climb.
Let's go now to Tom in Burlington. Hello, Tom.
Good morning. Incidentally, we were talking about 9/11. Our connection to that here in Burlington, the man who inspected that airplane was from Burlington. He came down, went to Chicago and inspected the American Airlines plane, and then it went to London, and then it went into the Twin Towers. His name was Mr. Weiss, and he was just devastated after it happened.
Yeah.
That's our connection to that. But I'd like to ask this question. The 18 to 24-year-olds seem to be very liberal, but they don't vote. And how do you think, if we could get them to vote in Iowa, how do you think it would change the complexion between this extreme radicalism of both parties when it comes to picking the candidate?
I
don't know. Young people, I think young people, the evidence is that they do trend to be more liberal than conservative. The current crop of young people in national surveys are more liberal even than they have been a few years ago. But it is, as Tom suggests, it is essentially irrelevant because turnout at the youngest age group is substantially lower than it is at every other level. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that young people are just not yet embedded in any community. And the evidence is quite clear that people who vote are typically people who are part of a community, have been in a place for a while, feel a part of that place. And for young people, they're very transient. It's very hard to reach them. every campaign tries, and you're going to see a real effort here in Iowa on both sides to try to reach young people because they're viewed as sort of a potential wild card. But, boy, getting them out is extraordinarily difficult.
Thanks, Tom. Always enjoy your stories. Susan in Wisconsin Rapids, hello, you're on the air.
Yes. Well, I think there was such a fever for the war in some ways because of 9/11. I thought everybody sort of went along with this, including Hillary Clinton, because if they didn't, it would have almost been thought at or looked upon as being treasonous to not go along with this.
Some didn't go along with it, like Russ Feingold. But,
right, but Russ was just about the only one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, there were a handful, and of course he was the only one who voted against the Patriot Act. But Susan's right. I mean, I think particularly Democrats who thought they were going to have national aspirations down the road, you know, how could you vote against this at the time? And it was true. Even more true of the Patriot Act itself, which was seen as a very direct response. But when you have the president and, more importantly, I think Colin Powell, who was greatly respected at the time as Secretary of State, making these claims, you know, how could you not, you know, just go along? Yeah. I think Susan's exactly right about what happened at the time.
And one more, Dan in Green Bay will have to be our last caller. We're almost out of time. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I think you're missing, or I haven't heard yet, that Hillary's unique problem on the war is that she's been sharply critical of the Bush administration's regime change policy when, in fact, her husband's administration since 1998 had Iraq regime change as an official policy. And at the time of the Iraq war, she cited that and made quotes supporting that as the basis. So it's a little bit tougher for her to be on both sides of that fence.
Yeah. Do you recall that, Professor Redlosk?
Well, I think the issue of regime change, the issue of Iraq, has been a challenging one for quite a while. And I think that while the Clinton administration wasn't sort of, you know, banging the drums for it in the same visible way, you know, I have no doubt that we were, you know, we've got policies to destabilize a number of places.
Yeah.
And certainly by that point, Saddam was no longer the enemy of our enemy, which was his real value to us earlier on.
Well, you are a wealth of information. I hope you'll come back and talk with us again as the campaign moves along.
I'd enjoy doing that.
Thanks very much. David Redlosk is an associate professor of political science at the University of Iowa, author of How Voters Decide, Information Processing During an Election Campaign. He also ran some presidential primary caucuses in Johnson County in Iowa in 2004. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There is much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.